20 minutes a day, 365 days a year. This is the Pack-A-Day Podcast.
What is up, everybody? Welcome into an all-new episode of the Pack-A-Day Podcast. I'm your host, Andy Herman. You can follow me on Twitter at AndyHermanNFL. You know Perry Goldstein. You can find her on social media at Perry_Goldstein. No Grant today because he's a slacker and he's the worst, and we're going to make fun of him all show long, but we miss him nonetheless, and we'll hopefully see him in a couple weeks. But enough about Grant. Let's talk about this game, Perry Goldstein. How the heck are you doing?
I'm good. I got home from MetLife today. So I got to see this game live, which is always very different than watching it on the broadcast, of course. Very fun. Packers fans showed up. I was telling Andy before we were recording, it was probably like 50-50 Giants fans, Packers fans. So yeah, great showing. I mean, it was loud when the Giants were on offense. I'll say that. So yeah, good times. Obviously the Packers kind of eked out a win there. It wasn't like, you know, a beat down. It was not stress-free watching, but they really, really, really needed this win.
Yes, they did. We're going to jump into all of that. I want to get all of your key takeaways on this. Obviously you were again at the game. Packers win 27-20. You mentioned the crowd is insane. What's the viewing experience like? What was your view of this game? reporting live from New Jersey? Yeah. Perry Goldstein takeaways from this one.
So we were in the end zone where basically everything happened except for one of the Christian Watson touchdowns. So I got to see everything. It was great. We're in like the second level, so kind of more like the bird's eye view, all 22 view, which I actually think I like better than sitting low down, because sometimes if you're not, you don't have good vantage point, you can't see what's happening everywhere on the field.
Yep.
It's funny being in person, like the field looks so much smaller than on TV. You're like, oh, they only have to go this far. But I would say the Packers, it still looked pretty tough to move the ball. Despite me just saying the field looked much smaller in person. Which was tough. And the drops were really hard to watch happen live. The drops are much harder to watch live because you see actually like how like easy some of them are, how wide open they are when Jordan is getting them the ball. Yep. The other thing I will say that was really crazy is obviously like I am seeing things prior to them being announced and tweeted out. So I was texting Maggie, Pax, which she said co-host. And I was like, oh my God, Jordan is running to the locker room right now. And she was like, what? What are you talking about? And no one had announced it yet, like on Twitter or anything. And she's like, oh my God, she's like, you're even ahead of the broadcast, even though I was on the other side, but we could see him like running
right
around. So there's definitely a little bit of that where you can like see guys go in the medical tent before anyone else knows. Obviously everything gets reported very fast. So yeah, those are the only things you get.
There was a little bit of, at least on my end, I don't know if it was for everyone, but there was like a slight delay in notifications on Twitter today, which worked out perfect because usually they'll like Schneidman or Wes Hott or somebody will tweet something and then it happens and you're like, well, got that one spoiled. But yeah, so the slight Twitter delay was helpful, but yeah, I definitely saw a couple of those come through throughout the game, and Love's injury was certainly one of them. The interesting thing was, he got hit, at least as I saw it, he got hit along the sidelines, and then it seemed like he was going to get up and go play. But right as he got hit is when the tweets started coming in of like, he's going in the blue tent and then eventually he's going in the locker room and things like that. Gritty performance from Jordan. We're going to talk about that quite a bit. One thing I do want to mention, Packers, of course, moved to 6-3-1 on the season. As of recording this, we're still very early on in the Eagles-Lions game. So as of right now, without a determination in that game, the Packers are 3rd in the NFC North, 7th in the NFC, pending the Lions game. If the Lions win, that stays the same. If the Lions lose, they would go to 2nd in the NFC North and 6th in the NFC. So we'll definitely be kind of keeping an eye on that through the course of the night. And of course, you guys are in the future listening to this and already know that result, but just a heads up on that. A couple key takeaways for me in this game. Number one, listen, this team just needed a win, right? Like, style points were a little bit out of the window at this point in time, where it's just like, it's kind of like a shooter that's going through the slump and just need to see a basket go through the hoop. Doesn't matter if it's a layup, doesn't matter if it's a free throw. They just need to see that first ball go through the hoop. And then hopefully that's a sign of things to come and they can get a little bit hot after that. It felt like that's what they needed in this game. That being said, Carrington Valentine dropped interception. Luke Musgrave fumble out of bounds. Romeo Doubs drop on third down. Carrington Valentine dropped interception. Well, at least hit sticked by, you know, his own teammate, Isaiah McDuffie, while trying to make an interception. No, sorry. That was the Bullard one later. My apologies. CV dropped pick. Fitzpatrick drop. Rasheed Walker holding penalty, missed extra point, holding penalty on a punt return. Romeo Doubs dropped, Dontavian Wicks drop. Edrian Cooper missed tackle on a 3rd and 15 that resulted in a first down. Jameis Winston somehow quarterback sneaks for 10 yards. He gets 10 yards on a stumbling quarterback sneak. McDuffie has a pass interference penalty. You have a bad snap that results in Jordan trying to recover and do something. He does something. He gets it to Musgrave, and Musgrave immediately vomits the ball. Looks like it's going to be a fumble. Ends up being a drop. Thankfully, only a drop. That's a major put a pin in it point in that game. Missed extra point. Watson drop on third down. Bullard McDuffie drop pick where they collide on the play. Nixon dropped pick. Face mask on Colby Wooden. Romeo Doubs drop. Josh Wiley hold. And then you kick it into the end zone at the end of the game to give them the ball at the 35-yard line when they need to go the length of the field to score a touchdown. Other than that, things were pretty perfect, though.
What's your point, Andy?
Yeah, my point is that...
Key takeaways, list everything the Packers did wrong.
List everything the Packers did wrong for a 45-minute segment that we call, here's today's Packers mistakes. that is a nightmare of just... Yeah. I don't want to call it necessarily ineptitude, but just, again, the same sort of stupid mistakes. It was like a clown car of a game. Yakety Sacks could have been playing through the entirety of the backdrop, and like all of these things happening would have felt maybe a little bit more normal. But they, I mean, thankfully they overcame it all. But so many of these are on themselves. Like, yeah, they just simple stuff. If you just catch the ball and, you know, even just that, like, screw all of the other stuff. If you just catch the ball on both offense and defense, this is like a 40 to like 13 game, like a 40 to 13 game, just by catching alone, just by catching.
I think so. I gave my recap of being there in person, but my key takeaways are, like, you got to get the jugs machine out this week at practice. Like, that's all, because, I mean, you said it, but there was 4 dropped interceptions, and I'm not talking like, oh, maybe if someone had made a play. No, Jameis threw the ball at the Packers defenders and they did not catch the balls. Like, luckily, Evan Williams on the last one, right? Grabbed number 5. And it was just really hard to watch. And I mentioned it briefly, but like, watching the receivers drop the balls was really, really tough live, especially like Romeo was wide ass open on a few of those. I mean, some of them are tough. Like, some of them are Jordan, like, you know, throwing it up there for Christian, for example, although Christian had an excellent game. So I'm putting him on the hot seat, unfortunately, because it's just the one I'm thinking of, but there was a deep ball, right? That he could have probably come down with, and he just didn't. And that's going to happen. But like, some of the Luke Musgrave drops, like, your job, your literal only job is to catch the ball. Like, that's it. Block and catch the ball. Like, that is it. And I have a lot to say about Luke Musgrave, actually. I don't know
We'll get to this.
To your point, like, yeah, you're going to get a few penalties. That's going to happen. It's a football game. Like, at this point, I don't expect anything remotely, like, close to brilliance, if average, from special teams. But to not catch balls, that's just, like, I don't know. I find that really unacceptable at any point in the season, but especially in week 11.
Yeah. And that's, to me, when I list off the mistakes, it's like 4 weeks feels like worth of mistakes in a single week. If it's like week 1, you didn't play your guys a lot in preseason and you come out a little bit rusty in week 1. Okay. If this is a team that's really buttoned up, and this is like a one-off, or this is like the first time that this has happened, it's like, okay, it sucks and it's stupid, but at least it's a one-off. But we're seeing so many of these things. And to be fair, and to the people who have been critical of Matt and this team, we've seen these things going back, you know, further than just this year as well. So to see a lot of this stuff continue to rear its ugly head over and over and just not being able to get out of their own damn way, that, again, I'm happy they got the win. It's not to, you know, say anything besides that other than the fact that, yes, there's still a lot of these same mistakes that are happening. And if this is a lot of teams outside of the New York Giants, they don't get away with those mistakes in this
exactly.
game.
Exactly. Also, like, these mistakes are important despite a win, because if you keep doing them, you're not going to win. You're
correct.
Going to lose if you continue playing like this. The Giants, like, almost also took this one away from them. Like, it was not, it was close. Like, this was not like, oh, but the Packers end up beating them down anyway, despite all of this. Like, that is not true. The Giants were moving the ball against them, like, very easily. It looked yeah. like they could do whatever they wanted, and they just happened to not be a very good football team. And so they were going to make mistakes of their own. And, like, that's why the Packers won.
Yeah.
Yeah.
No, it's totally fair. They're going to have to continue to figure that out somehow, of a way to kind of clear themselves of this mistake. And to your point, that 3rd and 10 play, 3rd and 11, 3rd and 10, whatever it was, to Savion Williams, yeah. like, put a pin in that moment in this season, depending on maybe what happens from here on out. I don't know what Matt does following that play. If they don't convert on that, if Savion Williams drops it, or if they just can't, you know, convert on that individual play, I don't know what his play call is. Like, they're not in field goal range in that situation at all.
Couldn't have kicked either. The wind was crazy.
No, for sure. So that one, it was 5:56 left in the fourth quarter, 3rd and 10 on their own 47, and they convert a 33-yard pass. You probably have to punt away there.
Yeah.
Down by a point, and I guess kind of hope and pray that your defense can get you the ball back. And then even if you get it back, let's say the defense gets it back and there's like a 2-minute drill or whatever, you cannot trust your field goal unit. So no. like you have to be you like, even if they, you get the ball back and you're down one, you might as well be down by 6, because you need, or at least 5, you need the touchdown in order to probably take the lead, or at least have any faith that you're actually going to score on the drive, because you can't trust the kicking situation.
Yeah.
So I cannot stress how insane that play was, how important that play was. And then, of course, the very next play, they get a 10-yard holding penalty, by the way.
Exactly. But I will say, a lot of people messaged me and, or like friends texted me being like, is the wind really that bad? Because I guess the broadcast was like going nuts about the wind. Yes. Just to answer your question, like, if you're like wondering about anything that was going on, like, yes, the wind was bad, very bad. It was like 35 miles an hour. And if you could see the flags on the, like, they were going crazy. So I know that that was a disadvantage for both teams. Going for two was definitely the move, even though it mathematically made sense to go for two when Matt finally did it. I think, like, regardless, it should have been what they tried to do all day.
Yeah, that's probably an appropriate observation based on how things going, both in the moment and in hindsight. But even adding more impressiveness to that 33-yard completion is Jordan buying time, finding someone, and through the wind, getting that near-perfect completion to save.
Throwing the ball today was not easy, like, by any means. I mean, you saw the Giants didn't even let Jameis, like, push the ball downfield, basically. And I don't know if that's because of the wind or because they don't trust him because he throws interceptions. It could be either. But the fact that Jordan could throw the ball downfield with, like, any level of accuracy today was so impressive, especially after taking that hit and having a shoulder injury and then coming back into the game. And I know it wasn't his throwing shoulder, because if it had been, he wouldn't have come back. But still, in a lot of pain, throwing against the wind, all of his receivers are dropping the balls, and he still pushed the ball down the field.
A massively clutch performance by Jordan Love. Yeah. It felt like he willed them at the end of that game to victory, wasn't going to let them lose. Not to mention Gritty coming back from the injury, having to go into the locker room, sure, probably get some painkillers. Looks like he had a couple patches on his arm as well.
Losing to come back. Jacobs.
And then, like, later, by the way, I don't know, like, there's one play where Dexter Lawrence just, like, lands on his left shoulder too. And it's just like, oh God, that had to be so painful.
Yeah.
And to, again, just get through that game and find a way to win. I thought that was a massive Jordan Love game. That brings us to our Luigi's Pizza player of the game. Harry, I can't go with anybody besides Jordan Love in this one. If you have somebody else, feel free, but
no, it's Jordan.
Yeah. This is one where if you're just looking at box scores, And if you're just looking at stats, Jordan Love's not going to be up, I don't think, for the air and ground player of the week or the NFC player of the week or any of those. 13 of 24, 174 yards, two touchdowns, no picks, still a 105.2 passer rating, seven drops on the day by the offense. And he was pinpoint. He was accurate. Another one of those incompletions outside of the seven drops was a play he had to throw it away because there was immediate pressure right up in his face. He tried to buy time as much as he could and then just had to chuck it out of bounds. That is insane. I mean, he was, I mean, arguably probably would have been like, what, take the throwaway away and the seven drops, you're looking at like 20 of 23, something in that range.
Yeah,
and
he throws for another 100 yards.
100 yards, maybe? 275, maybe three touchdowns, no picks. Like, it would have been a near picture-perfect performance in the wind, battling a sore shoulder, and just, again, coming up completely clutch when they needed him most. Honestly, like, again, box score be damned. It's not my favorite, but it's, like, in my favorite Jordan Love performances in his, like, short career so far. I'm not saying, like, top three. I'm saying, like, top five, top seven, somewhere in that range. I just loved how gritty he was in this one.
I think it just shows, like, why he is a franchise quarterback, because it doesn't have to be perfect. It doesn't have to be, you know, light the stat sheet up. Like you said, like, everyone's talking about this amazing performance. Like, if you're not really paying attention to the game, you probably aren't going to be talking about Jordan Love tomorrow.
Yep.
But a franchise quarterback is a guy who just says, okay, I don't know what's happening in this game. I'm losing guys left and right. My defense is having a hard time against the opposing team. Like, I'm just going to make sure that I get this ball down the field and to the guys who are going to make plays for me, and I'm going to get this ball in the end zone. Like, I don't care how I do it, how it looks, if it's bad, if it's good, if it's ugly, I don't care. And that's really, like, what it felt like. He never looked rattled today. He never even looked like he was in pain. I mean, I know I wasn't that close, but, like, he was still trying to run. Like, when he had lanes, I mean, he's a funny runner. We can talk about that a different time. Like, really funny. I think his nickname Silly Body is, like, actually so apt for what he looks like when he tries to run the football. But just, like, super, like, throw this team on my back and, like, hope that somebody comes up and makes a play for me, which a few of his guys did in the clutch. We already talked about Savion Williams, and I think Christian Watson had an amazing game as well.
Yes.
But that's, like, that's franchise quarterbacking right there. It doesn't have to be beautiful. It doesn't have to be a, you know, spectacular NFC player of the month game, which he has had already this season. It just has to be, we're going to win this damn football game.
I have a hot take on, first of all, I think that's beautifully said. I think that's 1,000,000% spot on of just him. He's the guy. This is what he does. This is his job. And he's just so comfortable in it at this point. I have a hot take on Jordan Love's running. On the one he got injured on, I actually think it was, like, a really good move. And he does that move on a couple different occasions. And I always think he's going out of bounds. And then he cuts back and nobody ever buys it. I'm always like, that, I think that's a good move. And he's not fooling anybody with it ever. It just doesn't seem. And I don't know if there's a tell. I don't know if they just have expected it from him now. But, like, I look at it, like, and I'm just like, that's a good move for a quarterback. I think that should get some people to miss, and it just never does.
No. If he's still in bounds, I feel like they're gonna hit him no matter what. It's also, like, the one time that you can actually hit a quarterback. Like, they're a real, like, they don't have the, when they have the same rules apply as everybody else because they're a runner. So I feel like defensive players love that. I think it's funnier when he slides.
Yes,
like, that's, it looks like no one has taught him how to slide, and he just, like, mid-game is like, oh, I'm looking at my butt down. I'm like, bro, someone teach you how to slide, please.
There does need to be some, I don't know if, you know, Sean Mannion, new quarterback's coach, can spend some drills working on the slide. That needs some work. He definitely needs to slide a little bit more. It also seems like at times he wants to be the one in those situations to try to deliver the blow. It's like, Jordan, let's not try to do that. Let's avoid contact. Let's try that from here on out. That's probably the better plan. But yes, phenomenal game from Jordan Love.
Do you know what I did tonight when I got home? We got home from the game.
Did you have pizza?
We made a frozen pizza for dinner, and I thought of you. I thought, I'm going to need to tell Andy when I record later.
Next time you come to Green Bay, we just got to stock you up. We're going to fit some freezing packages to, you know, have you fly on the plane home with some Luigi's pizza. We'll figure it out. We'll figure it out a way. Speaking of which, I am going to be in New York in about a month, so I need to know the absolute best pizza place to go to in New York City. So
got you.
That's your responsibility between now and it's almost a month to the day. All right. Habashirotir injury report. We've got a lot of injuries to go through. Perry Goldstein. Jordan Love, shoulder returned, thankfully. Does not seem like that's going to be a major issue for him moving forward. Josh Jacobs, knee injury, did not return. However, it has been reported that it is not a serious knee injury, so nothing like season ending or anything like that. Matt did not give any details other than his usual quote of like, anytime a player doesn't finish the game, it's a serious, you know, whatever. It does seem like there's going to be doubt as to whether or not he plays this week. We'll have to keep an eye on it through the course of this week, but thankfully avoided anything serious. Romeo Doubs and Matthew Golden both went out. I believe both did return to the game after that, their specific injuries. So good sign there. Golden was very limited with snaps overall in this game, though. Aaron Mosby went out with a stinger. He did return to the game. Quay Walker went out with a stinger. I need to confirm if he returned or not. I don't think he did. I don't think he did. Carl Brooks went down at one point, went out of the game. He ultimately did return as well. And then Zach Tom also went out with a back injury again, but he did return to the game also. It would seem that Josh Jacobs and Quay Walker would be the two. And then again, kind of the continued Matthew Golden shoulder injury, if they need to keep him out at some point just to get him healthy. But it would seem like maybe Golden, Quay, Jacobs would be the three to kind of keep an eye on going into this week.
For sure. I mean, the MetLife turf strikes again. Like, it's the worst. I mean, okay, I can say a lot about the stadium and I will refrain, but the turf is the, it felt like there was a player getting hurt like every 5 minutes. I mean, Giants players too, just awful, awful conditions. It rained at one point, like very briefly also, which never helps, but yeah, the injury report right now is, I tweeted this out, but it's just like, it's a CVS receipt. Like, it's so, so long. I think at this point in the season, there's a little bit of a balance. Like, everyone is kind of hurt and you just got to gut it out versus like how serious they are. So if everyone who got hurt in this game can practice, can return within, you know, a week or two's time, I'd call that a win in week 11.
I'm right there with you. Again, the Jacobs one, I think, is probably the big one to keep an eye on and just how long that's going to take to kind of get better. But that would be a tough one to lose for any period of time. Josh Jacobs, obviously a key part of this team. Maybe this is what it needs to recognize to like, hey, this is Jordan's team. You got to let him cook. It did feel like they kind of let him cook a little bit in the second half, a little bit more, and he did awesome.
So. Yeah.
I still want Josh Jacobs, though.
Yeah, yeah, you do. You definitely want Josh Jacobs.
Of course, 1,000,000%.
I thought it was interesting. You actually tell me what you think of this. Because, you know, when Josh Jacobs grew out, you're like, oh, great. Now we're going to have zero run game. We had a little bit of one, but now we have zero. And I actually thought that they did a really nice job scheming stuff up for Emmanuel Wilson and a little, I think Chris Brooks only had one carry, but he was great.
Yeah, one for eight.
As pro. It felt like, and maybe this was just one of those things that looked different on the broadcast than live, but it felt like the run game like didn't really skip a beat. And again, I can't tell if that's because it didn't or because the run game just hasn't been like that good. So
think that's your bigger one is I just think that we've been so accustomed to a run game that hasn't, I mean, here's the difference, right? Josh Jacobs went 40 yards on 7 carries. Emmanuel Wilson went 40 yards on 11 carries. Like, it took him 4 more carries to basically do the exact same thing. And at the end of the day, Emmanuel Wilson had a long of 11. Jacobs had a long of 15. It's not explosive. It's not dynamic. The longest run of the year still belongs to Jordan Love, not a running back or anyone else on the team. Like, that's the sort of run game it's been. So to your point, I agree with you that like, it was serviceable. It looked fine. There was not a massive degradation when Wilson went in, but I don't think that's because of like, oh, they did anything better. It was just like, that's just kind of the way the slog of a running game has gone all season long.
Yeah. Yeah, for sure.
We'll be right back. Today's episode is brought to you by Prize Picks. Now, the weather might be changing, but the feeling of being right never, ever, ever gets old. So keep the season rolling on Prize Picks by getting $50 in lineups instantly when you play your first $5 lineup. Now, it's time to start getting ready for Week 12 as Green Bay takes on Minnesota to try and get some momentum in the NFC North. This needs to be a big win for Green Bay, and I'm going with Micah Parsons to terrorize the Minnesota offense. Elsewhere in Week 12, I'm going with big games from Jonathan Taylor, Breece Hall, and Drake May. Here's the best part. Prize Picks is super simple. Just pick more or less on at least two player stats. If you get your picks right, you could cash in. And even better, how you play is completely up to you. If you want flexibility, choose Flex Play, where you can get paid even if one of your picks misses. And if you want the biggest payouts, go for the power play. No matter how you play, Prize Picks is a great way to put your takes to the test. So what are you waiting for? Download the Prize Picks app today using code PACKADAY to get $50 in lineups after you play your first $5 lineup. That's code PACKADAY to get $50 in lineups after you play your first $5 lineup. And don't forget that code PACKADAY, Prize Picks. It's good to be right. Anybody else feeling the financial squeeze right now? Everything just feels a little bit tougher, and I, for one, don't have the time to constantly monitor my finances and see where every little dollar and cent is being allocated. Thankfully, Chime understands that every dollar counts. That's why when you set up direct deposit through Chime, you can get access to fee-free features like free overdraft coverage, getting paid up to 2 days early, and so much more. I highly encourage that you take the time to learn more over at chime.com/packaday. Not only do we use Chime as a family, but I know multiple friends who use Chime and swear by it as well. The early payments, the free overdraft coverage, and access to over 47,000 free ATMs have not only been beneficial, but have come in huge in some really difficult situations. I didn't even mention the ability to get daily balance updates and real-time transaction alerts, which have helped shape our spending habits. So work on your financial goals through Chime today. Open an account in 2 minutes at chime.com/packaday. That's chime.com/packaday. Chime feels like progress.
Chime is a financial technology company, not a bank. Banking services and debit card provided by the Bancorp Bank N.A. or Stride Bank N.A. Members FDIC. Spot me eligibility requirements and overdraft limits apply. Timing depends on submission of payment file. Fees apply at out-of-network ATMs. Bank ranking and number of ATMs according to U.S. News and World Report 2023. Chime checking account required.
All right, Perry, let's get to the offense. Breaking it down in totality. Where do we want to start? We talked about Jordan. I want to give a shout out to Malik Willis. We talked about Jordan, the Malik Willis drive, a very important pivot point in this game as well. They're getting something cooking on offense with Jordan. Jordan goes out, in comes Malik Willis. You're not sure at this point of like, is the rest of the game a Malik Willis game? Is you don't know what is going to evolve from Jordan's injury in that situation. It ends up that Malik only gets the one drive. And he goes down and he does what Malik Willis has done basically his entire time in Green Bay. He puts together a successful drive, keeps Green Bay right on target, scores a touchdown, makes probably a ridiculous-ish throw to Christian Watson. I'm not sure that is the most well-advised throw in that situation, but what a play by Christian. And again, overall, a huge hat tip to Malik Willis for coming in instead of Jordan Love in this one.
It was a hell of a catch. Hell of a catch. I was expecting him to drop it at any moment and he did not. So strong hands. I will say, I don't know where this comes from, or I'm sure the touchdown helped for sure, but there was not really a moment where I was like, all right, if Malik has to do the rest of this game, I'm worried that the Packers are just going to lose this one. Like, there's so much confidence in Malik when he comes in. And again, like the confidence is warranted based on what we've seen him be able to do. And we luckily have not had to have him play at all this season. He played, plenty last season because of Jordan's injuries. But after that touchdown drive, obviously, I was like, you know what? If he has to do this, like, I think they can still do it. I really do. I feel so confident that they can at least win a game or two with Malik. You don't want Jordan out long term. So I'm glad you brought him up because I was also going to say just that. It says a lot when your QB2 comes in and it's not like a death knell to the game.
Yeah, totally. The fact, again, that there's even any level of confidence of like your backup comes in, it's like, oh, like
it'll Malik be, okay. will be
fine. Yeah, Malik will be fine. Like you're not panicking.
I was sitting with two other Packers fans and we were like, maybe he can get this run game going because he had that one carry for 16 yards. And we were like, I don't know, maybe this is like what they need to kind of like shake things up. This is our wild card, but obviously Jordan came back and it was fine.
There absolutely is, from just a pure running game standpoint, it just changes the math because you have now a player that you also have to account for. Even if he's just faking it, you still have to kind of keep somebody honest on the backside if he keeps it or whatever. And that just changes the math a little bit. Where now somebody's maybe accounting for him, or if they're not, he can again take off and have a 16-yard run like he did on that play, where it's not the be-all end-all like to save your running game or whatever, but it just gives you a little bit more of a numbers advantage. Yeah. you know, and probably gets you a few more advantageous looks too, if you wanted to throw, because again, maybe that safety is now dropping in the box because you're looking at a running quarterback to try to even out. It just changes the calculus a little bit. I think this is not me saying in totality, you're better than Malik Willis or anything like that, but from a pure running game standpoint, yeah, I do think he adds that element to the game for sure.
Okay. I'm throwing us so off schedule, but I also was thinking about this live, which is like, is there a world where, and I toe the line with this question because we always complain about Matt getting too cute, but is there a world where like we get Malik more involved?
Matt was asked this, Pete Doherty, I believe asked him after the game, if that would be something. And, you know, Matt kind of gave his wry smile and said, potentially, if you remember, they did have a package against the Bears last year. I think they only ran it once where Malik came in, but it was Jordan was still on the field. Jordan like lined up out at quarterback. Yeah. So it doesn't probably gain you a whole heck of a lot. I think there's always a fine line of like taking out your franchise starting quarterback and just in general.
I don't even mean that. Like Jordan's still in, Jordan's still quarterback or something, but like Malik is used. I don't know. In some way. Yeah. Yes. I definitely am not going to advocate for Jordan being taken out of the game unless he absolutely needs to be. But just like to your point around like, he's such an interesting wild card.
Of any quarterback that you could potentially do that to, just gut feel says like Jordan, if you talk to Jordan and said like, hey, we've got two plays that we want to get to with Malik at quarterback for a run situation, it's just going to be, it's you handing off, or it's just, you know, you're not going to throw the ball in the situation anyway. Do you mind if we run two plays with Malik? I would be pretty willing to bet you that Jordan would be like, yeah, no, that's no problem at all. I'm the guy. I'm not threatened by Malik Willis running two plays as a wildcat quarterback or whatever. Like, yeah, I think you could probably do that. Again, I think it is a, you know, again, trying not to get too cute. I think it's a one-off. I think it's something here or there. Could you give him like three back-to-back plays where you can have a wrinkle upon a wrinkle upon a wrinkle on it? Sure. I think you could probably do something like that. But yeah, I don't think it's a bad idea in general. I want Jordan on the field as much as possible, but he is a unique player that, hey, if your offense is just like, go back to Philly. If your offense is just getting bogged down and you just can't get anything going, like, can you just bring it in for just like a change of pace, just a change of pace, even like if it's two or three plays just to do it and then get Jordan right back in or whatever. Just again, maybe it gives you a little something different.
Yeah. Okay. I know we talked about the drops, so I don't know if we need to like belabor the point anymore, because I do feel like it was a little bit kind of the story of this offense today. Like everything just felt really hard. It was like two steps forward, one step back. That's like kind of how I would describe the offense today. I don't know how, like, if you feel the same way, but I also want to acknowledge that they're not necessarily working with everyone that they wish was out there, which, you know, changes things a lot. And yes, you need to catch the ball. That's your job. Like Romeo Doubs, there's like no excuses for that, in my opinion, from him. But like you have, you know, Doubs, Watson. Okay, Savion Williams had the one catch, but he came into the game hurt. I wasn't even expecting him to play when they said he got off the bus with a boot.
When he came down with that catch, I'm like, how is he even in the game?
How?
Like, I didn't think he was going to play wide receiver. Like, certainly, again, maybe doing just the kick returner thing. But I'm like, how did he even get in that situation? Yeah. I think Doubs and Golden were probably both beat up, which is why he was in. But I'm like, he came down with it. I'm like, what the hell is he doing in?
I agree with you.
He was.
I said, is that 83? I'm like, I haven't seen him all game. And you have Matthew Golden, who like basically has one shoulder right now. Dontavian Wicks, who I don't know what's going on. I don't know why they can't get him going. And then you have Emmanuel Wilson, John Fitzpatrick, Josh Weil, who caught a touchdown. It's actually a very good touchdown.
Yep.
Josh Jacobs is gone, and Luke Musgrave. We can talk about Luke Musgrave. I have thoughts. But like you basically have two and a half preferred starters because Matthew Golden is a half receiver right now. So yeah, it's gonna be a tough day. So I try to balance my thoughts around this offense with also knowing that they're fielding like some ones and mostly twos.
Yeah, that's fair. To be fair, the Giants are also fielding like a half team.
I know.
So there's also that. Here's my take on this offensive performance. I actually thought Matt did a really nice job of putting players in a position to be successful in this game. I want to talk a little bit later about some of the coaching stuff that I think they'll need to improve upon. But I thought both offensively and defensively, players throughout the course of this game were in positions to be successful. And I thought this came down to players doing their job.
Yeah.
The seven drops, the penalties on offense, you know, there's a couple plays where, again, players are shooting right up the middle, you know, taking a couple sacks here and there. Like when you say, you know, one step forward, two steps back, to me, it wasn't like, oh my God, this, what a horrible play call that was to back him up 10 yards. It was like, oh my God, another drop. Oh my God, a blown assignment or a blown block. Oh my, yeah. Like, and then same thing on defense.
If they
like,
had executed the game plan exactly. Was great.
I totally agree.
Yeah.
To me, this came down to players being able to execute and go out and do their job. And they, to me, this, we've talked about some of the stuff that's been frustrating with Matt. I think you can look at the Philly game, the Carolina game, and you can look at it and say that there's a lot I didn't like about some of the play design, the play calling, all of it. This one to me was a little bit more about, guys got to go out and just make plays that are out there for them. And if they do that, that game looks a whole hell of a lot different.
I completely agree with you. I also want to say one more thing about this offense, because we give them a lot of heat when they don't look good. And I just want to say, at least from the live, the offensive line looked really good today. Like
I was going to ask about that.
Jordan had some like really key, like, you know, long developing plays to drop back. He had time. He had time. Yes, they were not perfect. You know, the Giants have Brian Burns and Dexter Lawrence. Like they're going to get pressure. But as far as performances across this season, I thought they really improved upon the last two.
Yeah, a couple moments like you said here or there, but I thought in some key moments they also came up big with pass protection. Shout out to Chris Brooks, who had a couple really amazing blocks in this game as well. He was fantastic. All right, before we move on to defense, let's talk about everyone's favorite, Luke Musgrave, right now. By the way, Luke Musgrave, for those who don't know, basically got benched in the second half. He played two snaps in the second half after for basically all of last game and the first half of this game being the preferred tight end, at least per Justice Mosqueda, Acme Packing Company, only two snaps in the second half for Luke Musgrave. And Luke Musgrave was actually the third snapped tight end in this game. Both Josh Wiley and Fitzpatrick ended up with more snaps than Luke Musgrave. At best, this is now not just Musgrave's job anymore. He's going to have to earn it to get back into it. And there is a serious discussion to be had of who should be tight end one, who should even be tight end two. And Luke Musgrave does not have a lock, nor should he have a lock on either of those spots.
Okay. So my thoughts are, because I've been toying with them since Tucker went down. And just like from what we've seen from Luke Musgrave so far since he's been drafted. This is literally the opportunity of a lifetime for him. Like, this is his career opportunity right now. You never wish for tight end one to go down. But if they do, you get the chance to be that guy. To be like, I know I've had injuries. I know I've had some setbacks. But here, this is who I am. And he's not only not like rising to that occasion, but he's actually making the claim for himself that he's like just not very good.
Yep.
And I don't like wish for him to be bad.
We all want him to be good. We need him to be good.
He catches the ball only like 150. It's a coin flip if he catches it. If anything, that he has 0 yards at the catch. I mean, the guy,
it's going to be negative.
Sees the sticks and falls before the sticks, like cannot like reach for a first down to save his life. And then like got lucky today that he didn't cough the ball up in a way that gave the Giants, you know, the ball and perfect field position. Like so, so lucky. I've never been more happy that something was dropped in my life than caught. And like, that just, I think is a really, really bad place to be, especially when you are given the perfect chance to be tight end one.
We've reached the point where his drop was the best play of the game for him. Like the fact that it was a drop and not a fumble was like, oh, thank God. It almost is more to the point of like, when you see him like catch it in the flat, you know, nothing good's going to happen out of it. He can't turn up and get upfield. He's certainly not going to break a tackle. he tackles himself more, you know, like more than he's going to break a tackle. And now, you know, he's either dropping or fumbling as well. Yeah. It's a major disappointment. Second round pick, all, you know, all the height, weight, speed stuff that I'm hesitant to say talent, because talent is taking that height, weight, speed, and all of the traits and being able to put it together and actually be a good NFL player.
Athletic ability.
Yes.
That they hoped would turn into something, and it hasn't.
It just has not at all. And it, and not only that, rookie season, Luke Musgrave was like a solid, serviceable tight end, and it has gone downhill.
Yeah, that's what I completely agree with you. Like he's like it's like the more he plays, the less you want him to play.
Yeah.
Bizarre. How is he? You're better at spotting this than me. Like, how is he blocking?
Oh, it's terrible. It's terrible. Nice. I don't know in this game. I didn't keep close track of it this game, but in general, he's a get in way blocker at best, and he's not super great at that either. So yeah, it's just an all out night. I mean, you went from tight end being one of your superpowers to now it being a major issue where you just don't have a tight end that's going to help you at all in this team. That's a sucky place to be in. That Kraft injury is massive. It's beyond massive. It's brutal. Thankfully Watson comes back, and he again had a fantastic game, two huge catches. I don't know where this team would be without Christian Watson. I mean, imagine it took like 3 more weeks for him to get healthy, or 4 more weeks, or he came back and was like 60% of his normal self. Like this is like the best version of Christian Watson we've seen. He's been phenomenal. Yeah. So much kudos to him.
He basically gets credit for all 3 of those touchdowns that they had, because he had a key block that sprung Josh Wiley.
Oh yeah, the Wiley touchdown, yeah, too. Yeah.
Like good that's point. Like that doesn't happen without him either. So he catches 2 and then blocks up the other one. He was everything for this offense today.
To wrap up the day on offense, the offense finished punt, touchdown, touchdown, punt, touchdown, punt, touchdown, punt. That was your final drive summary for Green Bay. All right, defense, meanwhile, was touchdown, punt, punt, touchdown, turnover on downs, touchdown, interception, and then the final play where it was the Hail Mary fumble by Micah Parsons. So take that play away again. Touchdown, punt, punt, touchdown, turnover on downs, touchdown, interception is basically how it went for the Green Bay defense. You want to start with defense, or you want me to start?
I think I don't know what to say about this defense anymore. You are total championship level lockdown against the top, you know, NFC contender at the moment, first seed. And then you let the Jameis Winston led Giants, who don't have any of their preferred starters, dink and dunk you down the field, like just literally do whatever they want. You drop 4 interceptions. Like, who is this? What is this team? What is this defense? That's where I'm at. I don't know that I have any more like, you know, big analysis for them. I just like cannot figure out who they are.
It's a lot more bend but don't break, or in some cases bend and also break. It's hard to watch at times. It's a frustrating experience to watch. It's a weird scenario where you get to the end of these games and you like can kind of like talk yourself into of like, they only scored 20 points. Jameis Winston had 201 yards passing, no touchdowns and an interception. Okay, that's acceptable. They averaged 3.7 yards per carry on the ground. Okay, that's acceptable. You had 2 turnovers, 2 sacks. Like you get to the end of these games and you look at like everything statistically and you can be like, yeah, that should win you the game. That's a winning defense.
It sucks to watch.
And it sucks to watch, and it doesn't pass the eye test. It like when you have to have a play. Now in this one, they came up with the big Evan Williams interception, which was massive. Kudos to Evan for coming up with that. Horrible. I mean, everyone's going to talk about Jameis. Jalen Hyatt, what are you doing? That's a post route where he basically like gets to the post and just stops. And Evan Williams runs the route. Hyatt stops and Winston's expecting him. Well, I know people are frustrated with Breeze. I think Breeze called this one out. He crossed the face. He just literally like quits on the route that, yes, it's going to look like it's on Jameis, but a brutal, brutal route by Jalen Hyatt on that play. But great play by Evan Williams. But in real time, in like some of these key situations, and like when you like 3rd and longs, and, you know, opportunities to get off the field, they don't do it. And this is another great example of, they had almost 12 more minutes of time of possession in this game, the Giants did, than Green Bay, because of some of these long freaking drives that just go on seemingly forever. And Green Bay's offense is just chilling cold on the sideline, not doing anything. So I understand, like, again, you can make an argument for some of the like analytical like stats in this one and be like, yeah, it's like, it's kind of just a winning performance, but man, is it, it's not aesthetically pleasing in the process.
Well, how, again, if we're going to talk about how Jordan's performance was incredible and just like ignore the stat line, because that's not the whole story, then we kind of have to do the same for the defense, right? Like, they don't get a pass just because statistically they come out of this looking okay. Like,
well said.
They allowed the Giants to convert three fourth downs. And to your point, like, allowed really long drives, multiple third down opportunities, cannot get themselves off the field in key moments. I'll say it again, dropped four interceptions. And even I can get past the four interceptions if there's like, okay, they're going three and out, or,
yep,
you know, they're making Jameis like chuck it downfield, and it's really just like kind of an arm punt at that point. It's okay. No. They were led. It looked like, again, in person watching them move the ball down the field, it literally looked like the Giants could do anything that they wanted. They were having incredible catches also. Like, kudos also to those guys, like, getting up for their new interim head coach, because they did everything humanly possible, aside from Jalen Hyatt, I guess, to play their hearts out for him, because they were making amazing like sideline grabs and really contested catches. So there, that also like needs to be said, but this defense like has to be better than that.
Totally. And this is arguably like the worst collection of like weapons in the NFL going into this game. Yeah. Tyrone Tracy, I thought, ran really hard. I thought he had a nice game. He's a good running back. Devin Singletary's fine. It's Isaiah Hodgins, Theo Johnson, Wandale Robinson, Jalen Hyatt, Daniel Bellinger, and Jameis Winston at quarterback with an okay offensive line and an okay running game. It's
it shouldn't have been close.
It's one thing if like Jamar Chase is beating you down the field and you're like, okay, that's Jamar Chase. It's another if, you know, George Pickens is beating you along the sidelines. All right, it is George Pickens. If you can't get Isaiah Hodgins stops, like if we're struggling with Isaiah Hodgins stops at this point in the season, like that's a level of frustrating for sure. It's not easy. They're all NFL players. I get it. I really don't want this to feel like, hey, I know that they won and we're not just trying to pick out the negatives in this one. There were some positives by the defense as well. Again, Evan Williams pick, some good plays by Micah Parsons, et cetera. But they just constantly leave you wanting a little bit more and sometimes a lot a bit more.
I just also like, maybe I'm not as good as deciphering this. And maybe this is like just Jameis being a vet and being able to like feel and evade pressure better than maybe a younger quarterback, but it really sometimes feels like the pass rush isn't winning.
And they haven't enough.
And like they're doing like just enough, like having enough, like one of those, like one or two plays a game that you can like pick out and be like, okay, like that's where they show up. But like on a down to down basis, I'm having a hard time seeing them as much of a, like, you know, like mover than they are. Yep. And it allows, right, these receivers who, you know, are not like, you know, best in the world league beaters, to get, yeah, thank you, to like get open and make plays, because nothing's really being rattled all that much.
There's a lot of emphasis on making sure Micah Parsons doesn't beat them. He's getting a lot of attention. No, I mean, but then my point being is that other players need to step up. Like Rashawn Gary, just have to get more out of Rashawn Gary.
Are we like, because it's changed since LVN went out. No, yes, no.
No, I totally agree. I think they miss him. I think they need him back. And I think he adds another element to this defense for sure.
Yeah. Yeah, I agree. I don't know. That's why I ask, like, I'm like, today makes me confused, because last week, you know, you are going up against like one of the best offenses in the league. Like, you have AJ Brown and Devonta Smith and Saquon Barkley, and you play your you know, you're playing like, you know, hard nose football, like downhill, heavy, like you're not getting anything out of us, like energy. And today it was not that energy.
By the way, per Justice, Rashawn Gary and Kingsley and Igbari had the same amount of snaps in this game.
Rashawn was going out a lot. It was,
he was
really
going out a lot. Yeah. And maybe there's an injury situation there. We don't know. We don't know the full story at this point in time. Maybe he'll show up on the injury, but like, it's kind of been, if you're going to take, you know, a lot of snaps off, that's okay. They have the depth to do it, but then you better come out fresh and dominating. And that has not been the case. I talked about this in the post game show. That Rashawn Gary contract in 2026 is about to get a lot more buzz. There's a lot of savings there. They're going to be tight up against the cap. They might need to entirely make over this offensive line. Just something to keep an eye on. That I would kind of probably put it closer, probably put it like 60-40 right now that Rashawn Gary's back with the team next year, but that might be trending a little bit closer to 50-50 at the moment. That's going to be a very interesting situation to monitor the rest of this year and going into the offseason.
Yeah.
All right. Oh, God. Anything else?
No, I was gonna say, we'll put a pin in that and revisit.
We'll be right back. Guys, it's 2025. The days of going to the doctor for emergencies are over. No more waiting until walking it off for 6 months doesn't work, or your fingers are numb from texting, "I'm fine." It's time to take our health more seriously and get things checked out when we need to. That's where ZocDoc comes in. ZocDoc makes it easier than ever by helping to find the right doctor quickly and easily. ZocDoc is a free app and website where you can search and compare high-quality, in-network doctors and click to instantly book an appointment. You can filter for doctors who take your insurance, are located nearby, and are highly rated by verified patients. Appointments made through ZocDoc happen fast, typically within just 24 to 72 hours of booking, and more often than not, you can even get same-day appointments. I've already had family members who have used ZocDoc and loved it, and I'll absolutely be utilizing it on all my appointments from here on out. So stop putting off those doctor's appointments and go to ZocDoc.com/packaday to find and instantly book a top-rated doctor today. That's ZocDoc.com/packaday. Again, ZocDoc, ZocDoc.com/packaday. Hey friends, I've got some great news for you. I've got part of your holiday shopping already taken care of. I am absolutely obsessed with my new Ridge wallet, and it's going to make an absolutely perfect holiday gift for just about everyone in your life. It's also a perfect gift suggestion for yourself as well. I'll be honest, I was just about done with wallets. I suffer from back pain, which doesn't help. Plus, they are clunky to carry around, and I just don't even like having a wallet with me. That was until I discovered Ridge. Ridge is known for their unique, slim, and modern wallets. And Ridge has been perfecting the wallet for 12 years, and their new Ridge 2.0 is 10% lighter. Plus, they have over 50 colors and styles to choose from, including every NFL, MLB, or college team. And I just know that Packers one is already calling out to you. Now, Ridge is over 100,000 five-star reviews, and with their Ridge tracker card, you'll always know exactly where it is before panic mode kicks in. And right now, for a limited time, Ridge is having their huge holiday sale. Head to RIDGE.com to get 47% off your order. This is by far the biggest discount they've given all year. That's RIDGE.com, Ridge.com, for up to 47% off your order during their biggest sale of the year. And after you purchase, they'll ask you where you heard about them. Please support our show and tell them Packaday sent you. Before we get to our favorite aspect of the game, special teams. Oh, all right. Windy situation. You mentioned the winds were brutal. I would like to give just the, are you just full benefit of the doubt to the wind in this situation or no? No.
Well, I guess because the Giants kicker also missed. I think that
this was from longer though. Remember, he did get backed up, you know, 15 yards off of the penalty when he missed his. But yeah.
There's no excuses. I'm sorry. Like I say that just to like be clear because everyone was asking me questions. So I want to like just, you know, blanket statement. Yes, the wind was bad. But also like if you plan on being a kicker for the Green Bay Packers in the National Football League, you're going to have to kick in Lambeau Field, and Lambeau Field gets windy as hell too. So I don't know. Like Mason Crosby used to talk about like learning the wind patterns inside Lambeau so he could make kicks when it's windy. Like there's just no excuse if you play for the Packers.
I agree. Matt, you know, echoed something similar of like, you know, they practice in the wind all the time in Green Bay. He's like, at the end of the day, you got to get the job done. It did seem like there was a bad snap and hold on his second missed one. Looked like the laces were in on the ball. On field goal, if you're talking about like a 45-yard field goal or something like that, okay, I understand. And I understand extra points aren't like give like the 1 yard line extra points or 3 yard line, whatever it was before, extra points. But like, you got to make extra points. I don't care what the wind said. I mean, unless it's one of those Chicago days where like you see it going right through and then at the very end, it just goes like, this was not that. This thing swung immediately off his foot. Rough day for Lucas Haversick. And like the other thing too, is like, you a lot of times see, I know that they had to like hold the ball off the tee, but like kicking on the kickoffs, it wasn't like, again, it was like swinging or aggressively. I don't know. It just felt like it needed to be better. I get that it's not ideal conditions. You can't miss two extra points. And it could have been extremely costly for Green Bay.
Yeah. I mean, if they miss going for two on, they put themselves in a very hard position at the end of the game. Those points add up. We've seen it and talked about it in every game this season. When Brandon McManus misses, when Lucas Haversick misses, it doesn't really matter. You see how important those games are, because unfortunately right now, Packers offense is playing, they're playing really close games. They're not blowing guys out of the water. They're not coming away with, you know, three touchdown leads. Like, they need those points, and they need their kicker to, just like you're like, don't drop the ball so that we get more yards. Don't miss kicks. We need those points. They're not frivolous.
Speaking of like injuries, I know he didn't get hurt in this game, but obviously now Brandon McManus will be a key injury to kind of keep an eye on moving forward as well. Either way, this kicking situation, not ideal throughout the course of the season. Again, for like they've done a better job in replacing Hall of Fame quarterbacks than they have at replacing Mason freaking Crosby, which is really a remarkable thing to say. Really good day from Daniel Whalen, by the way, though. I thought he was good. Holding penalty on special teams, missed extra points, couple things here and there, but I thought Whalen had a good game overall.
Yeah.
I don't want to talk about special teams anymore. Some other miscellaneous notes, inactives for this game: Brandon McManus, Malik Heath, Nate Hobbs, Donovan Jennings, and Lucas Van Ness. Lucas Van Ness was obviously not able to go. He was questionable going in. Matt LaFleur did get asked about the Malik Heath situation, punted on it, said that they're going to keep it internally, and didn't have a comment on it. So we did not learn anything more. Although, again, I would assume that does indicate too that it's a disciplinary situation. But again, Matt did not answer any questions on it. We talked about Musgrave being benched. I think those are all my miscellaneous notes. I talked about the coaching, and I thought that the coaches in this game did a really good job of putting the players in position to be successful. I thought, again, defensively, you had your opportunity to get 5 interceptions in this game. Like, that's kind of job done by Jeff Hafley. Catch the damn ball. I thought offensively, they were, again, in situations to put up points, to extend drives, to keep the ball moving, and 7 drops and 2 sacks and multiple penalties stalled you out on numerous occasions, despite Jordan and Malik Willis playing fantastic throughout the course of the game at quarterback. What I will say, or what I think is a fair question to ask, is, and I know many are going to be harsh on me for saying this now and maybe not earlier, can this coaching staff get these players to eliminate these mistakes? We have been watching it now for a pretty extended period of time that the answer would seemingly be, I don't know. I don't think so. Because we've seen this stuff happen so often, whether it be drops, penalties, self-inflicted wounds, etc. I think it's a fair question to ask. Mm-hmm. I'm hopeful that this coaching staff can figure it out and get this group of players to play at the level that they need to. But I don't know if there needs to be a greater level of accountability. Like, hey, Romeo, you dropped 3 passes. Sorry, guess what? Next week, we're starting with Matthew Golden. We're starting with Christian Watson. We're starting with Dontavian Wicks. Like, I don't know if there needs to be something like that. There was with Luke Musgrave, right? Musgrave, you biffed it. You're benched in the second half. Good. Great. That's a start. We saw Malik Heath not travel with the team because of something. Great. I don't know what that next thing is, but clearly the message is not getting across to the players of, if you make these mistakes. We hear all the time about the benefit of competition, because competition is going to push these players to be the best they can. Cause if they screw up, then the player behind them is going to get the opportunity. Okay. It doesn't seem to be working that way. So either really live up to that and start putting those other players in, or you're going to have to figure out a different level of accountability, because right now these players don't seem afraid enough, or I don't know if they just need better confidence. I don't know what it is, but I'm losing confidence that this team can fix some of these simple mistakes that have happened now over and over and over and over again.
Yeah, not just over and over and over again, but like across multiple seasons.
Yeah.
I don't have too much to add because I think you encapsulated it perfectly. The one thing that I think about all the time, and I say all the time, seriously, I do think about this often, is the way Mike Vrabel coaches the Pats. And everyone, when he came in to be the new head coach of the Patriots, said, well, you can guarantee that those guys are going to be disciplined. Like, that is like if you know anything, like, they might not win a lot of games. They might go 500. They might miss the playoffs, but those guys are going to be disciplined. And now the Pats are, you know, fighting for the number one seed in the AFC. And I don't know if there's a correlation necessarily between the two. I think there's a lot of factors here, and I'm not just like making a one-to-one, yeah, because obviously Drake May is having a wonderful season and that team is just playing out of their mind. But I do think there's something to be said for disciplined football being your foundation. And I just don't know that the Packers have that as their foundation. And so they're going to continue to keep shooting themselves in the foot.
I think when Matt took over as coach, I think from the day he took over up until now, I think his preferred style of coaching in general is to have this be a player-led team. I think he wants the players to lead the team by example and have the leaders of the team lead by example and hold people accountable, etc. And I think that works when you have Aaron Rodgers, Davante Adams, Mercedes Lewis, Preston Smith, you know, Adrian Amos, and we can go on and on, you know, in a bunch of veterans.
A vet team.
Yeah. And a vet team in every phase. Like, there was a vet in every room on that team that you could go to and that can help David Bakhtiari, Corey Linsley. We can go on and on. When you are a vet-led team, yeah, that's probably a good time and place to have a player-led team. I think right now, this needs to be a coach-led team. I don't think that this is a team that's in a position to be sort of a player-led team. Whether it's that they're too young or whether it's that they're just not to that level yet, maybe they earn that. Maybe over the next 2 to 3 years, they earn the right as they progress to get to be that player-led team that he wants them to be. But right now, I think he has to sort of rein it in and change things a little bit and say, all right, I've got to be the guy that's holding everybody accountable, because it hasn't worked with this being a little bit more of a player-led team.
You know, what's interesting, while you're saying that, I was thinking about a company, and like, when you're a company and you have, you know, the CEO, your C-suite, and then you get rid of your entire middle management, let's say you get rid of like directors, senior managers, so you just have like C-suite and like a bunch of associates running wild. And like, some of them are going to be really good at their job and like, they're going to step up to the plate and you're going to go, you know, we got a good one there. And some of them are going to be like, oh, they needed a manager. Like, that's what I think of with the Packers right now, where it's like, we don't have middle management to take over. Like, when, you know, the C-suite like hands down assignments to then assign up under, and things are just getting lost in translation, or there's just like free reign to sit in conference rooms and not work. And it's just gonna, I mean, unless you bring in some vets, you're just gonna have to wait for these guys to age into that, but they have to like develop the right habits now.
Yeah. No, I agree. So just something I'm kind of thinking about right now, but either way, they've got to figure out a way to clean it up, or we're going to continue to see these same things over and over again. All right. As far as where the Packers stand, Bills beat the Buccaneers on Sunday. That's a big loss for Tampa in the NFC, although they still control their destiny in the NFC South. Bears beat the Vikings on a last-second kick. Big loss for Minnesota. Pretty much ends their, you know, almost any hopes that they have. They still have time left, but it's going to be very difficult for them. Huge win for Chicago, who, depending on what happens in this Lions game, could be on top of the NFC North by the end of this week. As we are recording right now, they are on top. It would take a Lions win against Philly to bump them off. Rams beat the Seahawks. Huge game there. And then of course Lions and Eagles are playing right now. It's halftime. Eagles are winning 13-6 in that game, which is good for Green Bay. We want Detroit to lose that game, so hopefully that stays status quo. Per the New York Times, Packers have a 75% chance to make the playoffs. That would move to 82% with a win over Minnesota this week, would move to 60% with a loss to Minnesota this week. It's going to be insanely tight. There are, you know, basically what I would consider eight teams fighting for seven spots right now in the NFC. Although Carolina is a little bit frisky right behind that, but you've got the Rams, Eagles, Bears, Bucks, Seahawks, Lions, Packers, and 49ers. That's eight teams. You only get seven of them. So one of those teams that I mentioned is going to be extremely disappointed. Green Bay has every right in the world to make a run towards the top of the NFC North and still be a number one or two seed in the NFC. And they have every right to be that eighth team out of the playoffs, depending on how they play the rest of the way. So yep, it's going to be very interesting. Those games in the NFC especially are going to be extremely important. The Packers remaining have Vikings at home, at Lions on Thanksgiving, Bears at home, at Broncos, who are now the number one seed in the AFC, by the way, at Bears, Ravens at home, and what's probably going to be an absolute must-win for the Ravens. Could be a must-win for both teams. That could be like a pseudo playoff game potentially of like, hey, both of those teams need wins at that point. We'll see. And then at Vikings, which I have a feeling is going to be basically an exhibition game for the Vikings. I don't think they're going to have anything to play for, but would probably love nothing more than in Minnesota with nothing else to play for than to spoil Green Bay's season and to try to kick them out of the playoffs if that were the situation. So a very interesting slate of games remaining for Green Bay.
Yeah, it's an interesting back half of the season because it's heavy on division games, which just I feel like have double the weight of even, not obviously when you play the AFC, but even if you play like other NFC contenders like the Eagles or the Rams or anything like that. So really important, especially now that the NFC North is so crowded still with the Bears and obviously the Lions being in it. I don't know. This is just, we're going to know very quickly in the next 2-3 weeks what this Packers team is made of and if they're made of, you know, the grit to go down the stretch or if they're going to end up kind of crashing and burning this season.
It feels like 2-1 at minimum over those next three games on the NFC North, Vikings, Lions, Bears in the next 3 weeks. Yeah. Minimum 2-1. Feels like the bar there. 2-1, you're probably still progressing towards the playoffs. And in all likelihood, that would include wins over the Vikings and the Bears and probably a loss to the Lions on Thanksgiving would be your guess.
They've done nothing this season.
The bizarro thing is like if you were choosing the loss, you'd actually choose the loss to be to the Vikings and then going and beating the Lions and Bears, which is a weird thing to say, but that would be your preference. But either way, win 2 of 3 and you're probably in this thing. Win 1 of 3 and you're really behind the eight ball and go 3-0 and you feel really good about things. Well, like you said, we'll see where they are. Meanwhile, Packers Vikings noon home game on Sunday, 6.5 point favorites for Green Bay opening in this game. Vikings lose to the Bears. Where I would put the Vikings are pesky, but bad. They're a bad football team, but they are pesky and they fight till the end. And even in this game, the Chicago had the win or had the lead basically the entire game. Minnesota looked like crap. Minnesota goes down, scores a touchdown at the end of the game to take the lead, and that takes the Bears going down and getting in field goal range and making a long field goal to win the game. Minnesota's not good, but they are pesky and they will not just give you the game and they're not going to roll over. They're well coached, but JJ McCarthy is bad. 16 of 32 today, 150 yards, a touchdown and 2 interceptions. Green Bay should be able to keep him in check. Injuries to keep an eye on this week for Green Bay: LVN, Josh Jacobs, Quay Walker, Brandon McManus. Perry, final thoughts?
No, it was a win. They won today. It was a win. Needed to win. That's my final thought about this one. I try to keep the mindset of like mid regular season. You win ugly, you win pretty. It doesn't necessarily really matter. I would just like to see a few more pretty wins, please.
Yeah, I'm again towards the beginning of the season. You get a 7-point win like those Bengals games. It's like, yeah, that's frustrating. It's the beginning of the season. They're still trying to feel themselves out. Whatever. You get to week 11, it's like, all right, let's grow up. Let's grow up a little bit. But I do want to go back. I know that this was us calling out a lot of things that didn't go maybe the way that we wanted today. I think it's fair to point those things out. I want to go back to the onset and what you just said. They needed a win. It just felt like, again, they needed a layup to go through the hoop to hopefully get a little bit of momentum. They have a win. Hopefully they can get that momentum and keep it against Minnesota and then get hot during the right portion of the season, which is all that kind of matters this time of year. Is can you get hot in November, December, January, and hopefully in February?
Exactly.
Perry, I cannot thank you enough for all of your wonderful insights. Where can we find all of your incredible work and anything you want to plug on the way out?
Yeah, just follow me on socials at Perry_Goldstein. You can follow the podcast at PWSS Podcast on Twitter, Blue Sky, and of course YouTube, Packs What She Said. Maggie and I are going to have our usual rundown, a few fun guests coming up, actually. People have been asking us for more female guests, so we're working on it. And yes.
Did you just have Mina Kimes not too long ago? That seems like a pretty good female guest.
We did. Thank you for plugging that episode. It was great. Yes. A little outdated now, but if you want to go listen to it,
it's always worth going and listening to me, for sure.
But yeah, you just follow us on socials and on YouTube.
Yeah, go check them out. Packs What She Said is the absolute best. Follow her at Perry_Goldstein. I have a bone to pick with holiday decorations before Thanksgiving, but I'll let you off the hook a little bit, I guess. Day after Thanksgiving to New Year's Day. That's my window. That's over a month. You don't need more than a month.
We were feeling rather festive this weekend and decided to just put it up.
Good for you. Go follow her at Perry_Goldstein. You can find me at Andy Herman NFL. That's going to do it for us today. But until next time, and as always, go Paco.
Go Paco.